Third case of the morning is Legendre versus Harrah's Casino, and we'll, excuse me, have to look at my prompter. Hear from Mr. Wanick.
Thank you. Good morning. Again, Peter Wanick here on behalf of the appellant's plaintiff, Ms. Nellie Legendre. We're here today asking this court to review, and this is an appeal of the district court's ruling on granting of defendant's motion for summary judgment. It's our contention that the district court erred in granting defendant's motion for summary judgment on the issue of breach of duty, as there are genuine issues of material fact which exist, and reasonable minds could differ on whether or not, in this case, the employee, Mr. Giles, breached his duty owed to my client, Ms. Legendre, when the video shows Mr. Giles collided with Ms. Legendre, causing her to fall and suffer injuries. And there's a second issue that we appealed that deals with the production of and the authorization of release of Mr. Giles' eye doctor records. The facts of this case are very important for the purpose of this court in reviewing the district court's granting of the MSJ. This is essentially a fall which occurred on May 21, 2023 at the Harrah's Casino. My client, Ms. Legendre, was a guest at the casino. She played the slot machine. She was on her way walking back to her seat at the slot machines. She's in her late 70s. She suffers from pulmonary arterial hypertension. She has a backpack with a machine that provides a tube to her heart, which provides medication 24/7. She walks very slowly. The video in this case, and the entire incident was captured on video, shows Eddie Giles Jr., an employee of the casino, weighs over 200 pounds. While looking to his left, he walks into my client, admittedly distracted, and hits her on her left side, or at 9 o'clock. She's facing forward and he hits her on the side. And causes a woman who weighed much less than he to fall instantly to the ground, suffering her injuries. The injuries involve a laceration to her scalp from Mr. Giles' teeth impacting her scalp when his mouth hit her in the head, him being taller than she. She also fell suffering a fractured hip, which required surgery, as well as injuries to her neck and back, all of which is documented in Mr. Giles' own written statement, which he completed within 30 minutes of the incident. In this case, we believe that Mr. Giles was solely at fault for the accident. However, we believe that for the purpose of the motion for summary judgment, clearly there are issues of fact, and particularly on the issue of determining breach of the duty, which we don't believe is appropriate in determining summary judgment on a breach of the duty of care. Factual dispute is one for the jury to decide, and the jury has plenty of facts in this case, which include the video of the incident, which shows Mr. Giles being distracted and looking to his left when he walks into my client.
Well, that's the principal evidence.
That's principal evidence, correct. But we also have a written statement by Mr. Giles in which he admits that he was distracted, although he says he was looking down at the time or adjusting his mask when he ran into Ms. Legendre. And he says that at no time in his statement and in his deposition did he ever see her before he ran into her.
Monica, are you contesting the standard of care? Or in this case, would you agree the standard duty, act like a reasonable person under like circumstances, would control?
It's a good question, Judge. We believe that Mr. Giles should be at a higher standard, a heightened standard. And the reason for that is that his title was actually customer safety officer. And he testified in his deposition that his entire job duty was to ensure the safety of the guests and patrons at the casino at the time. And I asked him, what does that entail? He says, well, that entails surveying the area for criminal activity, but also looking down to see if there are liquids on the floor, if there's anything that could pose a slip and fall hazard, as well as trip and fall hazards. But his sole duty was to ensure the safety of the guests at the casino. And yet in this case, the video clearly shows he walked into my client and caused her to fall and suffer the injury. So in our position, and we pled it in our lawsuit, we believe that because he was a customer safety officer, and he acknowledges in his deposition that he was to ensure the safety and well-being of the guests, that he should be looked at with a heightened duty. But even if, I'm sorry to mean to interrupt you. But
well, I was going to say, we're in Erie Court. We're bound by Louisiana law, and we're not going to extend Louisiana. It's not our job to extend Louisiana law.
What I was about to say is, even if you look at general negligence standard, Civil Code Article 2315, in our opinion, you get the same result, which is there's no doubt in this case. Trial court acknowledges it in the order and written reasons. The defendant acknowledges it in their pleadings. And it's accepted that Mr. Giles owed a duty to my client, owed a duty, no doubt about it. So the issue then becomes one of a breach. And the cases we cite, including the Burstaj case on page 16 of the brief, which is a U.S. Supreme Court case, stands for the proposition that proprietors owe patrons a duty to exercise reasonable care to protect them from employees and third parties. And there's no issue but that there's a duty which is to be decided as a question of law by the court, which the court did do.
Didn't the court say that both sides had duties?
I think the court did find that both sides had duties, but on the second prong of the test, the court found that no reasonable fact finder could determine that there was any duty on the part of Mr. Giles in this case, or that he didn't breach the duty, right? And that this was just an accident. And therefore, no fact finder should be able to determine whether the duty was breached or not. And that's where we find fault in the trial court's decision in this matter. The Louisiana was, and for this particular case, is a pure comparative fault state. And as I indicated to the trial court at the hearing in October of last year, that even if the jury were to determine that the damages were $300,000, if the jury determined both sides were 50% at fault, then my client would be able to recover 50% of the damages. And the court seemed to understand and agree with me on that, but then made the determination that there was no breach of the duty.
You know, you're free to argue your time for whatever you have to say, but I'm sure we've all seen the video.
Okay.
In my case, numerous times. Read the briefs, which are not long. We all fortunately remember the tort law. So what do you have to add?
Well, the only thing I would add is that the cases cited by the defendants are completely not analogous to the instant cases before with this case. I mean, for instance, in the Thalmeyer case, that case involved a music performer helping a 69-year-old person off the stage, holding their hand, and the court found there really wasn't a duty there, and that the plaintiff in that case simply missed a step and fell. And that's not what happened in this case. This case, an employee of Harris ran into my client. And I think that case is an apposite. And even in that case, the court did address the duty breach being a factual issue. And that's really what the core of this appeal is that we feel that when it comes to factual determinations, such as whether or not there was a breach of the duty, then that issue should be decided by the trier of fact, in this case, the jury, because it's fact intensive.
And I just have one question on Louisiana law. If it went to trial, there was a jury finding ascribing 60% responsibility, comparative fault, to Ms. Lehendre, would she still recover if the other 40% were Mr. Giles?
If the 60% was to my client?
Correct.
Well, I think under the new law, which just went into effect, I think it'll contribute with 51% or greater, but I think that the comparative fault law would apply in this case and would not apply the new law retroactively.
Right, so she would still recover, but simply 40%.
She would, yes, Your Honor. The other case that is cited by the defendant is the Manicki case, which is also cited by the court. In that Meineke case, the court found that the employee owed a duty to the plaintiff to refrain from running, walking, or walking in a distracted manner as she approached the doorway of the restroom. There's no issue in this case but that Mr. Giles was walking in a distracted manner. He's looking to his left when he runs into my client.
Well, and but that was his job, was to look around.
Well, but if he's surveying and looking down...
Maybe it's just the characterization, whether you call it distracted or simply looking via,
Well, yeah, but I mean, if say you're operating a vehicle and you look out the side window and then you're rearing the car in front of you.
Yeah, this is not a vehicle case.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
But I still believe that as a customer safety officer, he needs to know his surroundings and he shouldn't be able to walk into another guest. And particularly one where she's looking this way, he's walking straight into her left at 9 o'clock. I mean, the only way she would have been able to see him is if she was looking to her left to have avoided him from hitting her. And I think that's a distinction in this case that I don't believe that the trial court fully appreciated. We believe that the cases that we cite, including the Frierson decision, as well as the Beard decision, which stand for the proposition that in determining a breach that's very fact-intensive and it should be left to the jury to decide those issues. Frierson involved an employee that came around a corner down an aisle and ran into another customer, and the court denied the motion for summary judgment in that case, finding that the employee, if the employee maintained a proper lookout prior to the accident, was a factual issue that should be decided by the jury. In the Beard versus audiovisual case on page 23 of our brief, a guest was walking out of an elevator in a hotel and collided with an employee as the employee was crossing in front of the elevator. The MSJ was granted by the trial court in that case, but the appellate court in that Georgia case reversed, finding that issues of fact existed regarding the breach issue, and that factual issues such as determining breach should be left for the jury to decide. And that's essentially the core of our argument here today. Again, if you've seen the video, great. If you haven't, I implore you to look at it, and also to look at the written statement of Mr. Giles, which I think confirms that he never saw her before he ran into her, and that is evidence alone of him being distracted in violation of the Meineke case.
Okay, one question, jurisdictional issue. There's information before the court in response to our request that the Jazz Casino Company LLC, you can trace down its membership down to the first incorporated entity as Caesars Holding Inc. And the appellee has indicated that that entity is incorporated in Delaware and has its principal place of business in Nevada. And you don't dispute that. Is that correct?
I don't have any information to dispute that, no.
Thank you.
And we would just ask that you, again, we would ask that you find that the trial court erred in granting the motion for summary judgment and reverse on that issue.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Durham.
Good morning, Your Honors. Meredith, and may it please the court, Meredith Durham on behalf of the appellees Harrah's Management Company, LLC, and Harrah's Casino New Orleans, LLC. Your Honors, this court should affirm summary judgment for these reasons. First, as this court noted, the security video is the principal evidence. In this case, it is uncontested fact. The uncontested fact set forth in that security video demonstrates that Mr. Giles exercised reasonable care consistent with that of a reasonable person. He did not breach his duty to act reasonably by momentarily glancing left. This is supported not only in the uncontested fact of the security video, it's supported by the applicable law, which is the Meineke case. The Meineke case is a case that involves an interaction between a casino patron and an employee walking in a casino environment. Second, plaintiff has put forth no evidence of a material factual dispute. What we've heard from opposing counsel today and at the lower court are characterizations of testimony and improbable inferences that, as a district court noted, fail to overcome the reality of the incident as faithfully depicted in the security video. Third, Louisiana law does not impose a higher duty of care on an employee. Judge Rodriguez, you had this question earlier. The Thielmer case is on point with respect to the duty of care. Mr. Giles' duty here was to exercise reasonable care. The Thielmer case specifically rejected any proposition that an employee owes a higher duty of care.
I didn't hear him really arguing that.
The Thielmer case in this particular situation, Your Honor, we've cited the Thielmer case to stand for the proposition that an employee owes a duty to exercise reasonable care. I think the question earlier from Judge Rodriguez was whether or not counsel agreed that there was a duty to exercise reasonable.
You agree he doesn't have a. You're saying he doesn't have a heightened duty of care.
Correct.
You agree that there's some duty of care if we're just walking around anywhere, as pedestrians, and there are other people. We have an obligation to at least look out so that we don't have collisions throughout the day with these other people that we encounter. You agree with that?
Yes, Judge.
So he should have at least been. He needs to look out where he's going when he's walking in the casino. And there is a case that talks about the casino environment is especially busy and all of that stuff. But absent a heightened duty, he had a duty to watch where he was going.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so did she.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so why isn't this just a case of allowing a fact finder an opportunity to determine whose fault it was that they had this collision?
Because Mr. Giles' conduct did not fall below the standard of care of a reasonable person. He did not breach any duty to act reasonably by simply and momentarily glancing left.
Well, I watched the video, as I'm sure all three of us did. And he looked left for what seemed to me to be an extended period of time. If your head's on a swivel, you're kind of looking like this. And then in that open area, people could be coming from any direction. So whatever the reason, he may have been looking at something that he thought was a matter that he needed to give some extra attention to. Whatever the reason, he looked left for I don't know how many seconds, but it seemed like a long time to me. It was long enough for her to have a collision with him and he not know that she was there until he collided with her. And so all I'm saying is, what you have is an instance where the judge granted summary judgment, and it seems to me to be an issue of fact in at least what was at the time a comparative negligence jurisdiction. We get to compare who caused the collision. I mean, she certainly had an obligation to look where she was going, but a fact finder could look at what both of them did, and we have the video, could look at what both of them did and attribute the percentage of the negligence to him, the percentage to her. They both had a duty. You agree?
I do, yes.
Now tell me again why a fact finder shouldn't have an opportunity to make a determination about who was negligent and who wasn't, or how much.
Certainly. The duty in this case was articulated by the Maneki court. And the court in Maneki articulated that in a casino environment, as Your Honor said, an employee has a duty to refrain from running, from engaging in horseplay, or walking at an unreasonably fast pace. The security video demonstrates that Mr. Giles was doing none of those things.
But you're treating Maneki as a floor. You're saying that if it doesn't reach Maneki, then there's no breach. But Maneki doesn't represent sort of the bottom line. As long as you don't do these three, then you didn't breach. I mean, there can be something below Maneki that's still a breach, can't there?
Certainly, Your Honor. But in this case, Mr. Giles' duty is to observe his surroundings. That he looked left, that he momentarily glanced left, is not a breach of his duty to act reasonably simply because he was doing so. If this was the case, if it was the case that an employee could not momentarily look left or to his right.
You understand that when you say momentarily, that's a subjective determination.
Yes.
That it was momentarily. Somebody else could look at it and say, that was an extended look left.
Yes, Your Honor. In this case, we're not disputing at all that his head was turned to the left. But that just a brief head turned to the left, it does not result in a breach of his duty to exercise reasonable care. Mr. Giles is an employee whose job, again, is to observe his surroundings. He needs to be able to look left and look right. Absent 360-degree vision, there's no way that an employee could be held to this standard of looking straight ahead at all times without an ability to survey the floor and survey what is going on around him.
Does your position require effectively the conclusion that sometimes people run into each other and neither individual is at fault to some degree, that neither fell below the duty of ordinary people walking around, and that this represents one of those conclusively based on the video?
Yes, Your Honor. The video demonstrates at this point, we believe it's uncontested fact as to what happened. There's nothing to infer. We know that he looked left. We know that the plaintiff was coming, was coming and walking down and did not see him either. We do agree that Louisiana has a maxim that sometimes things happen. In this particular case, two people bumped into one another. Just because they bumped into one another does not mean that there's negligence, and it does not mean that there's a violation of the standard of care. Rule 56 allows summary judgments. It allows summary judgments when there are no genuine issues of material fact. At this point, again, the security video demonstrates it is uncontested fact. What it shows is what it shows here. And what we believe that the improbable inferences regarding testimony and so forth cannot dispute as to what is demonstrated on the video here.
And you have to view the evidence in the light most favorable to the appellant in this case and conclude that no jury could look at that video and determine that the employee, Mr. Giles, by looking away, by looking at it momentarily, prolonged, either way, and say that was all within his duty of care.
That's correct, Your Honor. His duty is to exercise reasonable care under the circumstances. We do not believe that he breached his duty simply by glancing left, and the performance of his duty is to observe his surroundings. In the Thielmer case, the Louisiana Appellate Court affirmed summary judgment in favor of the defendant, finding that the employee there who assisted the plaintiff down the steps did not breach any duty to act reasonably. In Mays v. Dolgan Corp., LLC, then Judge Engelhardt also granted summary judgment, finding in that case that the employee's discarding of ice cream in a dumpster did not act unreasonably when that was the alleged source of plaintiff's slip and fall. Summary judgment is appropriate when there is no genuine issue of material fact. We believe in this case that the security video demonstrates there to be no uncontested fact as to what occurred. The district court was proper to conclude that no reasonable minds could see differently with respect to whether or not Mr. Giles.
Uncontested what occurred. We had no video. What's contested is whose fault is. And even if your argument is there could be a determination that neither one of them was at fault, everything you said up to when you mentioned Rule 56 sounded to me like a closing argument at a trial, and not an argument where it's appropriate for appellate judges, or would have been appropriate for a trial judge to make a determination that no fact finder could no reasonable juror could look at it and determine that maybe they both were at fault.
Well, the district court stated in its reasons that no reasonable juror could look at this, and that is the standard on summary judgment at this point. That no reasonable juror could look at it and say could look at the video and determine that Mr. Giles breached his duty to exercise reasonable care under the circumstances. That is the standard. To get to a trial, we have to have a breach. There's no breach by a glance to the left in the performance of his duties, which is to observe his surroundings. With respect to the portion of plaintiff's appeal regarding the motion to authorize the release of the ophthalmology records, wasn't addressed. I would simply state that we believe the magistrate's decision should be affirmed in that case. The appeal should be dismissed for want of jurisdiction first and foremost. It was never objected to under Rule 72. Thus, the issue was not preserved for appeal. With respect to the if the court is inclined to hear it, regardless, the magistrate's ruling was proper to the extent that the production of those records certainly was a bridge too far under Rule 26. And they were not proportional to the needs of the case.
My review of the transcript on that issue, and there's a forfeiture argument certainly, but even if we reach it, is that the magistrate judge essentially said it wouldn't have mattered because he accepted that Mr. Giles was looking away, even if he had been looking. In other words, irrespective of how good his eye was, he wasn't going to see her. Is that your recollection of what the magistrate judge essentially accepted?
Yes, Your Honor. The magistrate judge indicated that his head was turned to the left. And there's certainly no dispute that his head was turned to the left. And the reason was proper. He was not going to see her because his head was turned to the left. The production of those records was immaterial under the circumstances. He testified truthfully to his eye restriction. There was no need for the production, as the magistrate deemed it was a bridge too far under Rule 26.
All right, we have your argument. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Wanick.
To address some of the issues you raised, Judge Graves, essentially the defense
argument. Be brief.
I'm going to be very brief. Okay.
Okay, because this is a simple case.
I understand.
Okay. I'm not saying how the court will rule, but it's simple.
They're saying an accident happened, both parties were at fault, and therefore no one's at fault. And that's not what pure comparative fault is. And I think you hit it on the head. That's for the jurors to decide. And the reason why the magistrate judge ruled the way he did is because he said that it didn't matter whether he was looking straight, or he wasn't looking straight, therefore his vision acuity was irrelevant. And therefore, he said he was distracted. I mean, there's no issue but for the fact that this gentleman was distracted. Under Manicky, the court found that he has a duty to refrain from walking in a distracted manner. Therefore, this is an issue for the jury to decide and to determine allocation of fault. Thank you.
All right, sir. Thank you. Court will stand in recess.